back to the Hoops Temple podcast. We are here to finish up the top 300. Aaron Schroeder, Sacramento, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. I know you're excited to get to the top 400, Nate. I can see it in your eyes.
I honestly never believed that we would get to the top 300. So
really?
Yeah.
I always thought we would. I don't know. I think I never doubted that we'd finish this.
Oh, God. I had so many doubts. I'm like,
no doubts of me. I've been consistent.
You are the champion of this. Your persistence, your diligence to do the research has made this all possible. I wish I was a younger man and I had that sort of stamina and like go-getter attitude on this. If you'd met me in my younger years, we'd be at top 1,000.
Oh, sure. I should put this energy towards like a job or something. I gotta figure this out.
True. All right. Well, so the way we've been doing it, if you've listened this far, you probably already know, but we rank the guys by position first. Then we take the top player at each of those positions. And those are our candidates list, and we select them as we go. So, Aaron, I'm not going to ask you to read the top 275. We'll save that for another pod. But could you read us our five nominations that we have on the board?
Of course. So from the point guard spot, we have Jason Terry. From the shooting guard spot, we have Jeff Hornacek. Small forward brings us Luol Deng. Power forward, Anton Jameson. And from the center spot, Tyson Chiam.
And now I've been meaning to do this. But if you took these guys on their like high-end average, like whatever their 5 to 7 year peak span is, how many wins would this five-man unit win as like an NBA team?
It's a good team. It's a very good team.
It's solid, right?
You have great – you have the scoring options in Terry, Hornacek, and Jameson, and Deng and Chandler are very good defenders. This is a 50-plus win team.
Really? You're still saying that this team wins 55?
I guess it depends what era. Like, I'm thinking of close to the era that they played in.
Yeah.
Which is around, sure. let's say this is a 2007 team or something. That's a 55 win team. I don't think with this much depth, I don't think you would need the superstar talent to get to 50 plus win.
That is fair. A lot of these guys would be like the third or fourth best player on their teams. But if you've got five of them, it's solid. I'm going to start asking you this at the start of each of these episodes, just so we can like kind of see like, hey, we went from having the starting five of like Magic, Jordan, Jabbar. That's an 82-0 team. And now we've whittled our way down to like, all right.
It's a good question. You know, it kind of reminds me of the 97 Hawks, where it's like Steve Smith and Mutombo. And it's like very talented, but they play Jordan and they lose. Like that's kind of the same vibe.
Yeah. Too. Yeah. All right. Well, who's your nomination for 276, I guess?
I have Jeff Hornacek. We talked about him last episode. Got close to putting him in the top 275. Makes just one all-star team, but 14.5 points throughout his career. But he's just a consistent, like, 15 to 20 points on good teams. Great third option. Makes the conference finals with the Suns in 89 and 90. Makes the finals with the Jazz in 97 and 98. Has that contribution to winning. Has the longevity. What do you think?
He was my guy. I had him at 274. You actually talked me out of having him in the top 275, so I'm glad we can get him in there. You know, one of the knocks on him is that he does have some real just playoff collapses. The 97 finals, game 3, 1-for-4 shooting. Game 5, 2-for-11 shooting. In 98, he's got 4 games, 37.5% from the field or worse. So, like, kind of collapses there at the end. But he does drive a lot of really good offenses for the Jazz throughout the regular season and in Phoenix beforehand. So, you know, hey, at 276, I will take a couple of final stinkers at the end of the man's career.
For sure. Lock him in. Our next shooting guard nomination is Doug Collins, the 4-time All-Star Sixers player.
Hurt before he could hit his apex, I guess, or what we were hoping for.
Foot injuries. But the first overall pick, I think the 73 draft, 73. 73 is right.
Yes, sir.
He was there at the Sixers' reward for going 9-73 the year prior.
You say that, and like I keep thinking of what is like the bottom limit for the Pistons this year. Like, how bad can it possibly be? And like, we were discussing the 0-3 Denver Nuggets before we started recording, and I'm like, you know, 17 wins. That sounds completely implausible.
No way Detroit gets to that. I was talking to Jack. In our last time I saw him, and I'm like, do you think this team could win 9 games? Like, no, I don't. I really don't. Like, this is an 8-win team. Like, I mean, Nate, they have to win 5 more times. Five more times? Five? Cade's hurt. Like, every game that Cade's not playing is a loss by 20. No way they win one of those.
Whoa, and then it's whoa. Like, Kevin Knox, the man, the myth, the legend, finally even coming into his own.
They played the Spurs, they lost by 30. They played the Wizards, they lost by 20. They can't even beat the other bad teams.
Oh my God.
The only way they get a win is like Toronto, who traded away their like their third best player or their second best player, and they didn't have like the return. The guys they got in return hadn't showed up yet. Like had they made that trade a day earlier, the Pistons are on a 40-game losing streak.
All right. I'm just thinking about when this will drop. There's not a chance that this... We're recording this January 13th. There's a chance that June. This will not drop until like mid-February. Just knowing
it's a summer project.
Like, well, it's when we have spare time. I've got a three-day weekend. We've got some extra time now. But yeah, so I guess when you're listening to this, hopefully the Pistons have 8 wins.
Not going to happen. Come back and message us and say, Aaron, you were right. Pistons have 7 wins. They're 7-75. that sounds like a preposterous record when I say it out loud. 7-75. But that's reality. That's reality. This is the worst team ever. It's the worst team of all time.
Yeah. And you know how you can let us know that this is the worst team of all time? Email us, hoopstemple@gmail.com.
That's true.
Got that plug in early.
Let's go. Finally figured it out. All right. Who's your nomination for the next spot?
277. I want to go with Antoine Jameson.
Okay. You know we have disagreements about Jameson.
I know we have disagreements about Jameson. But at some point, the fact that this man plays, what is it, like 1,000 games? Yeah. 1,000?
Yeah.
And 800 or 1,083 games. And is a 20 points per game scorer for basically a decade in there. And I know it's high volume bad teams. Someone has to do that. And I really do cling to his Dallas year, or in kind of the middle of his career, that 04 year where he comes off the bench, wins sixth man of the year. But you see all of his stuff become immediately more efficient. And I just think, like, if he wasn't playing with Gilbert for his prime, if he was playing with insert other star player here, if he had ended up in San Antonio, like we've seen that he can be efficient player on a good team. That just wasn't his destiny. Do you want to know the wins of his Warriors from 99 to 03?
Oh, it's really bad. I remember going through this. I think they win less than 20 games, like 4 times.
It's 21 wins in the lockout year, which is solid. It's a 50-game season. 21 is solid. Then 19, 17, 21, and then 38 the last year he's there. And it's like, all right, maybe the fact that you're getting 20s doesn't matter that much, but it's just the consistency.
That is kind of my issue with it. I didn't have Jameson here because the teams are so terrible. I think he wins less than 20 games 4 or 5 times over his career. I had Tyson Chandler. He plays in more games. You have like rim protection. You have great rebounding. I feel like that kind of seamlessly fits into winning. And you see that happen in his championship run, like in the impact he had for the Knicks. And he goes back to Dallas, like helps him figure it out again. I kind of value that over like the Jamesons. Like he could have been 15 points off the bench. Like I think that's what you saw from him. And maybe the high volume on bad teams was the best thing for him that we're having this conversation because the numbers look good. But if he's in Chandler's spot, is he just 15 points a game and no one cares?
See, I struggle with the Tyson Chandler because this man, while he provides good defense, he does not provide much else. The rebounding numbers, lower than what you'd expect throughout his career. He is not like a demonstratively great rebounder. The defenses are always good. He gets to good positions. So I don't care that the block numbers are a little bit weaker than it expected. Offensively, he is a rim-rolling lob threat big man, so he's completely reliant on those good guards. And he plays with Chris Paul for a couple of really important seasons there, or with so hard to remember if they were New Orleans or the Pelicans or the Hornets.
New Orleans.
But you know, New Orleans, that team.
It was.
They're also OKC for, like, Hornets.
City.
There.
Yeah, the yeah. Oklahoma City Hornets.
I have Tyson.
I'll tell you what.
A bit further down, can we maybe find some common ground with the Dougie Collins?
Maybe. I'll tell you what. I'll take Jameson, and I'll go for this. Because in 2007, in the first round, against LeBron, they do get swept, but he's averaging 32 points and 10 boards. That's a fucking crazy playoff series. Maybe it's a good team. It's bad. It's good stats in a bad team, but the teams are okay enough, and you see him play in the playoffs enough to understand that he could still drop 20 come playoff time. Give him 30 a night. Outscore LeBron James.
He's 54th in career regular season points all time NBA history.
That's true.
I mean, that's got to count for something.
LeBron averages 28 points on 42% shooting. James and 32 points on 48% shooting. Do you want to tell me one other 2007 Wizard that plays in this series? One. Just one. One of them.
Well, so this is the series without Karan and Gilbert. So what, you got Deshaun Stevenson there. Was yep. Etuan Moore the center?
I do not see him.
Just trying to think of other Wizards in this era. It's like, I can kind of picture their faces, but it's a bleak team. Do you want to read the starters? Team.
Sure. I can, let's go for game three. In game three, Jameson has 38 points. They lose by six. Antonio Daniels has a pretty good series.
Okay.
Jarvis Hayes, Deshaun Stevenson, and Eaton Thomas. The bench is Darius Sangalia, Brendan Haywood, Roger Mason, and Michael Ruffin. Deshaun Stevenson shoots 19% from the field in this series.
I was thinking, I said Etuan Moore and Eaton Thomas. That just kind of crossing. They're not that similar players, are they? Yeah, they're pretty similar. All right.
You were close. All right, we'll go Jameson. I'll take Jameson.
Okay. I have actually quite a few guys before Tyson Chandler are in here. How many more guys can I functionally get over him? Where's your kind of levels at?
I could be convinced. I'm not locked in. All right. What are the names? And we'll go from there.
I mean, I got names from Paul Millsap all the way down to Dan Majerle. Love me some good Thunder names.
Yeah. Millsap is our next power forward. After we put in Jameson, Millsap's the next one up. I do like some Paul Millsap.
I feel like with Millsap, you just have a guy who contributes so much to winning teams over the years. He is a cornerstone for those Utah teams. The Hawks, 60-win, 4 or 5 All-Star teams, he's there. And then, he's not as important in Denver, turning into the 20s. But, like, you got, like, 9-10 years of him really contributing into these other franchises.
You know what's interesting is he really could have been more for those Denver teams. Because when he leaves, he still is an All-Star. Like, he's an All-Star in 2017, joins him in 2018. He just gets hurt. His injuries start to pile up, and by the time he's like kind of healthy again, which basically never happens, he's in his mid, instead of his early 30s, it's mid 30s, which is a whole different conversation. I do like Paul Millsap. Leads the league in defensive win shares in 2016, which is a hell of a year.
Let me get you some playoff numbers. There's 2014 in the playoffs. They go 7 against Indiana in games 6 and 7. That was going to be much more impressive. Combine the stats for the two games in my notes. So I was like, man, he got 31 points, 35 boards. And I was like, oh, all right.
Hey, that's a good, you could split those up. It's the good rebounding numbers, right?
Yeah, solid rebounding numbers. In 2016, though, he delivers a 45-point game against Boston. They do win his minutes by 2, but they lose by 9, and he's held scoreless in OT. So it's kind of a mixed playoff bet.
I'd say overall, from like a player of this quality, 24 playoff series played in, 11 playoff series won, played from 07 to 2023, basically, not 2022. That's a lot of longevity, over 1,000 games played. Who is your other guy?
So I've got a lot of other guys. Is here. We're basically going to hit every other position before we get to Tyson Chandler.
Man, this is bullshit. This is ridiculous.
You're right. Tyson Chandler should be over Luol Deng. So I'm not hard sold on these guys. But what do you think about Doug Collins? Collins, it's a much shorter, like the other guys were talking 1,000 games. Collins, we're talking 400. But we're also talking a much higher peak of Collins being that 4-time in a row All-Star, one of the best shooting guards to the era and a key contributor on, they don't win with him, but do they make the finals twice?
Went to the finals and he's playing 40 minutes a night. Him, like, he kind of takes a big step forward from the regular season to the playoffs in 77. Him and Dr. J really step up in that playoff run. It's why a team that kind of bumbled their way into the playoffs made the finals, because they just like, all right, McGinnis isn't shooting anymore. It's Collins and Dr. J. And that was a good system. I honestly think I might be too high on Chandler just looking at his stuff. I think of like ultimate winner, tons of games, like good rim protection everywhere. But he's like, he plays so much time in fucking Phoenix and like shitty Bulls teams. He plays in just 15 playoff series and wins 7 of them. And even in the, like, he's playing big minutes in the finals against Miami, but not really, like, kind of 31-ish minutes, 30 minutes a game in the playoff series before that. So I think I want to do Collins and then Millsap, just because Collins has this great 77 run when the leagues merge.
I will take it. Yeah, I was with you there with kind of being a little bit disappointed looking back on Tyson Chandler's career, because the memory is he is just an absolute dominant defensive force. And it's kind of more, he's a good roller and a good defender who peaks out with that Dallas team as like an elite defensive force. But that Dallas team also had really good defensive wings. Sean Marion is there, or Mike Finley is Finley on that team that wins the title? I want to say
2011? No.
No.
Long gone. Long gone.
Yeah, he'd gone to Spurs.
It's like Marion and Kidd, Stevenson. Yeah.
And like they absolutely had the Lakers numbers coming off back-to-back their titles, and you look at it, and Kobe couldn't score against the wing depth. And like Tyson Chandler, yeah, he's providing that backline protection, but we underrate how good the rest of the defenders were on that team and how many stoppers they had.
That's how they won the title. They surrounded Dirk, who was just this awesome go-to scorer, with a variety of not just offensive creation, most importantly, defensive creation, defensive variety. You had Kidd was still like the best defensive point guard in the league, or one of them, even at the age of 46. And Marion is one of the best wing defenders in the league. Like, they had the ability to stop guys at all levels. And that, I mean, that's why they have such an incredible playoff.
And, you know, for the 1,000-plus games played, he only plays 76 in the playoffs. And he's only getting 35 minutes a night in two playoff series.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
Yeah. Sorry, Tyson. No, I think you're right. I think I just got caught up in the 2011 one. I did. I'll be honest.
I'll be honest.
Okay. So our next, with Collins and Millsap out of the way, our shooting guard is Victor Oladipo, and our power forward is Otis Thorpe.
I do not plan to talk about Otis Thorpe before we get Tyson Chandler on the board. So at least you got one.
My next player was Jason Terry.
I like
him. He's on the 2011 Mavs, and I think he's better than Chandler. You have 1,400 games played for Terry, 13.5 points. He plays in 23 playoff series and wins 11 of them. In the 2011 run, he's playing about the same minutes as Chandler. You could say Chandler's more important to that 2011 run, but Terry's also the starting shooting guard for the 06 run, playing 40 minutes a night, averaging 22 points a game in the 06 final. So he has that going for him. Where is he in three-pointers made? I will tell you that.
He's pretty high.
He's 10th. He's 10th all-time in three-pointers made. You get just a great sixth man, 2009 sixth man of the year. Starts about half his games, and good score, long time. What do you think?
I want to pull up a stat right now. What do you think Terry's max three-point attempts are per game?
In a season?
Yep, in a season.
Man, at the time, in like the 2000s, it's probably like 6 or 7. I'll say 6.5.
It's 6.2. Do you want to...
Check me out.
How many players are averaging more than 6.2 three-point attempts right now?
Oh, man. 25.
32.
Ah, that was close. That's pretty good.
Like, to be 10th all-time in three-pointers made, like, it's... He's going to tumble down the list just with the volume of how many guys are shooting. But it's really a tribute to his longevity that he's still this high, given just given in how many more guys are shooting that high of volume right now. Like, when he shot the 6.2, trying to find out where he was at in field goal attempts that year, 3-point field goal per game attempts. Basketball Reference, why are you fighting me? Yeah, I can't find it, but it just is kind of crazy in my mind that he's that high. And it's a sheer longevity play for him.
Absolutely. He comes through in big moments in the playoffs. For someone that averages, that never cracks 20 points per game for a season, like, he has playoff series, like the 06 finals, get 22 points a night. In the 2011 conference semis against the Lakers, he's almost 20 points a night. So he's stepping up in these big stages. So let's go Terry at 2. Where are we at?
280.
280.
A couple more just stats that I had on Terry. 14th in career games, regular season plus playoffs, combined NBA, ABA history. 35th most minutes in combined NBA, ABA history, regular season and playoffs. And then to close out Miami in 2011, that's a 27-point night. That's how you close out LeBron James with Jason Terry hitting the shots.
He locks up LeBron. That's JJ Barea. But Terry outplays LeBron down the stretch. Undeniably.
With Terry off the board, that brings on Stephon Marbury. How are we feeling about the Starbury?
I feel good. I like Stephon Marbury. I've learned to like him more, but I think in terms of impacts on winning, Dang and Chandler have to go first.
Okay. I can certainly get Luol Deng there. I'm ready for Deng. He is the highest guy on my board. And I wouldn't hate Tyson Chandler above him. Do you have a strong leaning?
I think we should go Deng ahead of Chandler. I think I was wrong about that. I think 281 should be Deng, and then 282 should be Chandler. Like, I mean, just Deng is, for Chandler, I just don't see the minutes per game. And I don't want to get caught up in minutes per game, but 27 minutes a game for his career peaks out at about 35 for a good Hornets team. But for Deng, I mean, maybe it's the Tom Thibodeau effect, but God, you couldn't peel him off the floor. And I feel like maybe Chandler would have played more for a Tom Thibodeau team or something, but I do think it speaks volumes that Chandler, like, despite being really good, is kind of a situational big, like, is kind of a, at times, like, he's not playing the entire game. Where Deng, like, 39 minutes in 2012 and 2013, leads the league in that stat both times. Plus, like, I mean, you think of, like, the Rose days, but also, like, the 07 Bulls are really good. 49 wins, like Ben Gordon and stuff like that, and he's playing all 82, 37 minutes a night there. I think things are out.
I was thinking about Jalen Williams today, because I was trying to rank out the top players under 24, just kind of who are the young guys. And with Jalen Williams, I couldn't quite put my finger on, like, the thing that he does amazing, but he does everything, like, above average. I kind of feel like Luol Deng is a similar player. Like, we chalk it up to defense, but he could also score. He wasn't ever going to get you a ton of assists, but he could pass. And there was just like, he did a little bit of everything really well. And so if we talk about, like, situational fits where Chandler may fit better in certain situations and worse in others, and, like, and he gets to the Bobcats and it's just not good there. He's also dealing with some injuries, but, like, they decide not to start him for a time. Deng, you would never make that call. Deng, when he is good, he is starting everywhere. And while his Lakers contract was a absolute albatross that we ended up having to stretch and pay for a good number of years afterwards, like, it made sense. I mean, it never made sense. It was always way too much money. But the player he was made sense. How much money?
I thought his contract with Phoenix was huge. He has, like, he's 4 for 53 on Phoenix or something. I thought he was just, like, a buyout guy for you guys.
Basketball Reference says it. Oh, there it was. 18 million.
You paid him 18 million bucks?
A year.
For how long?
I believe it was, like, a 4 or 5 year deal.
There's no way the Lakers sign Tyson Chandler to that money.
Oh, no, sorry, Luol Deng.
Oh, dang, sorry, I'm so, yeah. Right. That's right. I was like, because Chandler plays, he has the big contract with the Suns, then plays the Lakers. I was like, did they give him that much money? Like, no, you're right. No. That was ridiculous.
And you know what, Tyson Chandler, a better Laker than Luol Deng. But
kind of crazy how Deng falls apart. I do remember, like, when that signing happened, like, what the Reddit comments were like. Because at the time, people were like, you know, veteran leadership, going to turn this young team around. In like a month, they're like, what the fuck was that? That was a terrible contract. We made a huge mistake.
It was also the spike year where it was like what are we going to do?
It's so much money. But I think we're done talking about small forwards.
Oh, actually,
our next one is Richard Jefferson.
I have three more small forwards on the list.
That's not true. Because it's Richard Jefferson and it's Andrew Wiggins. So I don't know who you're putting Wiggins above, but we're gonna have some serious talks.
I mean, are you gonna take DeAndre Jordan above Andrew Wiggins?
Yes. Yeah, I am. Hell yeah, I am. Andrew Wiggins is the worst player in the league right now. He was good for one season.
Okay. All right. My highest guy is Stephon Marbury, followed by Victor Oladipo on the board.
Right? Who did I have? I did have Marbury. Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. It's a similar case to Antoine Jameson. And I think we may, when we kind of get out of this positional gridlock, when we're reviewing things over the summer, I think there's a case that Marbury did more, or at least had a higher peak than Jameson, but he doesn't have nearly the longevity. He's capping out after like 840 games. But some of those games at the end aren't great.
Well, the thing with Marbury is his teams are awful. But he was always like around top 10 in points per game. He's in top 10 for assists per game. He's going to get 22 points and 8 assists. The team will be bad. Maybe that's his fault. Maybe that's not his part. I think it looks worse because they always like they trade. They get Sam Cassell instead, who's much better. They get Jason Kidd. The Nets get Kidd, and it's way better. And so it's like, okay, like the swing is much different. But I think Marbury did kind of limit your ceiling.
Him leaving Minnesota really hurt them because they don't. they go from 45 wins down to, well, it's lockout year, but they go from 45 down to being 500. It was supposed to be him and Garnett, and he leaves, so they don't quite bounce back as well. When he leaves New Jersey, they get Jason Kidd. They also draft Richard Jefferson and Kerry Kittles, who had been out the previous year, returns. So you see this like huge spike. And then kind of the same thing happens when he moves on from Phoenix, is they get Nash, and I forget if Amari was hurt the previous year or if he just takes a giant leap.
I don't know if Amari's there quite yet.
He is there. No, he gets two. There.
Yeah, in, no, he is there.
03.
It's like him and Hardaway are both hurt or something. Or they trade Penny. It's a disaster of a Phoenix season.
Yeah. So when he's with Phoenix, they're 18-42 with in the games he plays in 2006. But Amari is also hurt. Amari plays just three games that season. So it's like, yeah.
Is that true? Is that lining up?
05-06? Oh, no, yeah, no, sorry. I'm looking at the wrong time period.
Yeah, I think you're a little too early. Yeah, because, Stoudemire gets there in 03.
He gets there in 03. But, all right, so it's the Stoudemire leap between 03 and 04.
Yeah.
Which is in part attributed to Nash, but also, like, it's not just Stephon leaves and these teams get really good. Yeah.
They figure it out.
They figure it out. They bring in a better replacement for him, but also then they have other adjacent moves that really help bolster the roster.
Yeah, looking at like the 03 Suns, like rookie Amari, it's 44 wins. Yeah, it's like him and Starbury and Hardaway and Sean Marion's there. It's like a good team, right? And
yeah,
29 wins, and then it's like way up to 62. They get Nash, but Stoudemire is. I mean, the thing is, like guys like, I mean, Joe Johnson's there in that 05 leap as well. That's part of it too. You get Joe Johnson coming on, but Nash just worked better with Stoudemire, with Mary and stuff like that. But okay, where are we at?
We now have Calvin Murphy on the board, the pocket rocket. He had a 20 points per game scorer, a boxer.
I think you're skipping Bibby. I have Bibby.
I did skip Bibby. I was very excited. All right, we got Mike Bibby.
Yeah, I'm glad you're excited about the next guy, because it means you all swallow your fucking pride and put Bibby in. So we have Bibby, Victor Oladipo, Richard Jefferson, Otis Thorpe, and Wayne Embry replaced Chandler, the 5-time All-Star from the 60s in the Royals. Who's your next guy?
My next guy is Victor Oladipo. I think it's so brief. It's a season and a half, but it's hard to make the claim that any of the rest of these guys is here could lead a team or could be a top 15 player in the NBA, which I think that is what Victor Oladipo was. Is that 2018 year? It's two All-Star appearances, but one All-Star or 1 year that he's an All-Star, he's all defense and all NBA. Was it first team? Mm-hmm. No, it's not first team.
I think third team, but he's first in the steals, and he's just this crazy two-way guy. I mean, it's so interesting because Oladipo is such a disappointment in the Magic.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a disappointment in Orlando, and like, that's what he was supposed to be. We didn't even realize that that's what he was supposed to be until it was happening in front of us. But he takes LeBron in the 2018 Cavs to 7 in game 6. He has 28 points, 13 boards, 10 assists, 4 steals on 11 of 19 shooting. And if they, I know like LeBron James has plot armor, and the league would have never allowed him to lose to the Pacers, but it's just an incredible season. And while I really like, I like Bibby. Bibby has great playoff moments. I thought about having him over. That's just a really, really great year for Oladipo. It's something that's really special.
Do you know what the Game 7 stats were for Oladipo?
Awful. Really bad. I don't want to talk about it. Are they bad? Are they bad? I could have sworn they were bad.
They're bad. Then I've got the wrong numbers here, which does happen. We do a lot of this.
No, they're good. No, I'm totally wrong.
30 points, 12 boards, yeah. 6 assists. 3 steals?
That's on me.
10 for 21 from the floor?
Maybe I was thinking about Sabonis.
4 from 9 from 3? Like, he did really well. Push LeBron as much as you can.
I apologize to Oladipo for thinking his stats were in that game 7. I don't know. You know what happens when other stars try to beat LeBron from like 2011 to 20 or 2012 to 2018?
Yeah.
The league puts a little something in their drink the night before. They're a little hungover. It's the plot armor that keeps LeBron going.
Well, and Darko, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Rakatovich? No, sure. Can't be that.
The Raptors coach?
Yeah. You know, he might have LeBron something to say about.
I've been saying LeBron has plot armor since like 2016. I'm like, this dude, like, maybe, obviously that speaks how good he is. It's like, he cannot lose in big games. Like, he's gonna win somehow.
Well, LeBron gets 15 free throws that game, but George Hill somehow ends up with 9 fourth quarter free throws. I don't ever remember George Hill shooting double digit free throws in a game. So, like, getting 9 in the fourth of a game 7 smells a little fishy. Smells a little fishy. Well, Victor coming off the board, that brings up our next shooting guard as Reggie Lewis. Our shooting guards, we've got this just like run of guys who were really good for really small amounts of time. Like our power forward and centers, we're talking 1,000 games. We got Otis Thorpe sitting on deck with 1,200 games. And we're like, yeah, but Reggie Lewis had the peak.
I like Lewis. He has the peak. With Lewis, I mean, he passes away in a game in 93. But prior to that, like 90 to the second round, against the Cavs in 92, he's averaging 28 points a night, 4 boards, 4 assists. The first round in 92, a sweep of Reggie Miller's Pacers, 28 points again. Like, he puts together a 20-point-per-game playoff series in 6 straight playoff series during the early 90s. I mean, it's so crazy because the Celtics, I know, it would have crushed you as a Lakers fan, but the Celtics could have extended their dynasty. They're winning from the 80s into the 90s, but both Len Bias and Reggie Lewis pass away. It's just insane circumstances that caused that group to crumble uglier than it should have.
Oh, yeah. That team burned itself on both ends. With McHale playing through injuries, his career breaks down a lot faster than it probably should have. Larry Bird deciding to shovel his own gravel on his driveway, throwing out his back, doing that. Like, just why is that what kills Larry Bird's career? And then Magic getting HIV, kind of killing some of Bird's will to play and compete. Like, it was a cursed time period. None quite as bad as Reggie and Len Bias dying. Like, don't mean to put injuries on that level. But it really does destroy the Celtics. And Reggie Lewis had arms for days and was one of the guys who really bothered Michael Jordan. And just from like a defensive capacity standpoint, he had the length to trouble what Michael wanted to do. And in his last year of playoffs, not 93, but 92, they take the Cleveland to 7 games, and he is averaging 28 points per game as like kind of the best Celtic out there.
What do you think? Have you talked yourself into Reggie Lewis? Are you ready yet?
I mean,
early.
I was going to give the nod to Richard Jefferson on longevity, but you know, we can dance around it. Are you trying to go with the point guard option here?
A little bit. Part of me feels like having Wayne Embry, Hall of Famer, 5-time All-Star, just kind of hanging over our heads, not really sure what to do with, you know, the 7th best center from the 60s or something. He still has the 5-year stretch of 16 points and 11 boards, top 10 rebounds per game a couple times. Like, there's that. I know we don't really know how to comprehend what's going on, but he has a 20.13 rebound a game season where the Royals start to turn it around, win 42 games the next year. It's like kind of him and Oscar. And for a Royals team that had really struggled since their championship over Mikan or over the Knicks and beating Mikan along the way, him and Oscar are kind of like the two bright spots. Him, Oscar, and Jerry Lucas, basically.
I forget when they jump from 10-man rosters to 12-man rosters. There's in this point, but you're looking at a 9-team league and roughly 100 players in the league at this point. And I guess where I struggle at is at that time, you've got either 20 or 24 All-Stars.
Mm.
They whenever they move the rosters, they move the All-Star spots up, which I think is actually a good move.
That's smart.
All-Star spots should be tied to either how many players are on teams or how many teams are in the league.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, a quarter of the players are All-Stars. And so when I see that he has 5 All-Star appearances, I struggle.
It's not as exciting.
Yeah. And then you look at his, like, hey, he was a good scorer. Well, he's 14th to 18th at his peak. And in a 100-person league, that's like, it's not as high as what I'd want.
Can I give you what my scale says?
Yeah, what's your scale
context? The scale says he has a 3-year stretch. He's top 20 3 times. 62 is 4. I'm going to tell you.
Sorry.
In 1962, he was 14th. In 63, he was 12th. In 64, he was 15th. So you have right on the edge there.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. That's a good run. It's a good run of being like a fringe kind of top 15 guy.
It's a good run of being a fringe top 15 guy. I'll take it.
Okay. I think that's the smart move.
Ranking these older stars, just it gets harder and harder as we kind of go down. I mean, it's been a while since we've talked about a 50s or a 60s player. We haven't talked about one of them today, have we?
Not yet. Our next center, though, very exciting, DeAndre Jordan himself. Someone that I've kind of come around on. Like, I think you sold him really well, and it made me kind of rethink. Because for a long time, I mean, what I believe still kind of holds true, where Jordan's shortcomings and massive flaws in free throw shooting hurt the Clippers in their chances of real contention. But in terms of rebounding, in terms of rim protection, at least in the regular season to get to 50-plus wins, God, he was really good. Man, he was really, really good.
And I'm trying to think, I'm trying to pull it up. How many minutes was he getting those games? Because that is, you know, even with the defense, even with the free throw shortcomings, you still he still had to play a lot.
Let's see. By the time he takes over the starting gig, like his Clippers day is 2013-18, is 32 minutes a game. 11 points, 13 boards, 2 blocks, 45% from the line. But like we saw Ben Wallace shoot fucking 20% from the line. God, the guy's an awful free throw shooter. Wilt is the same thing, different conversation with Wilt. But I mean, you like guys who miss their free throws, yeah, it hurts. But if they're a demolishing defensive like force like Jordan was, then it's still worth it in a way.
Yeah. Are you interested in him then? Is that what you're trying to tell me? That you'd rather have DeAndre Jordan?
Are you?
Well, I had Wayne Embry quite a ways down. So this is messing with my board.
I'm really not yet. I think what Reggie Lewis was doing was just, hey, 20 a night, like just one of the best players with no issues, no weird flaws, no free throw stuff. I think Bibby should be above him, like just huge playoff games, great during a playoff run. Could shoulder an offense, like be the lead guard on some of the best offenses in the league, where Jordan just isn't that. I mean, and think about like, Jordan wasn't finishing games. You couldn't have him out there. And you really could not because
sadly,
he wasn't good on
offense.
He
was finishing games. That's part of the problem.
You couldn't have him out there, but they did anyways. And that was the problem.
All right. So if we lock in Reggie Lewis at 286, are we comfortable with that?
Okay. Sure.
I take it you're going to keep fighting me on Richard Jefferson. So then I've got two, and they're back-to-back in my rankings. But it's Dan Marley and Mike Bibby. Are you ready to make your case for Mike Bibby? Or do you want to make... where'd you have Marley?
Let me type in. Let me get Marley pulled up. I have Marley pretty close. Pretty close. I think, like, you have his all-star years where he's his all-around player, kind of similar to Luol Deng, like playing like tons of minutes, pretty good scorer, great defensive player, good everything else. Then you have his like true just role player days in Miami, but always finding a way to contribute to winning. I don't feel like Marley has really anything like what Bibby does in 02, but he does play in more playoff series. Like there's more like vague winning and less like specific, like one great series.
Mm-hmm. He's got the whole 93 run. Yeah, he's got that whole 93 run where he is averaging 44 and a half minutes a night. It's his career changes as he gets older and kind of has some injuries. The younger Dan Marley is like, he's Thunder Dan. He's let me drive and let me dunk it in on you. And then as he gets older, they start laying back and he starts becoming more of a jump shooter. But he really does it all. And looking back on him and kind of reading what other people have to say about him, they are much more pro his defense than I think I would have expected or kind of see. Like, defense is always hard to see in the numbers, but they talk about him being a relentless defender and never backing down from anyone. And when you see the kind of limited scoring, like it makes sense that he's out there for defense more or in some of these series than he is for his points production.
For sure. But he has value either way. I think I'm okay going with Marley first. It is just, I love Bibby. It reminds me of like of what Jokic and Murray did last year. Mm-hmm. Like imagine if Chris Webber wasn't like shell-shocked when the fourth quarter started and he was Jokic instead. It was very like just kind of Jokic was the everyday star. Murray took over fourth quarters in like crazy ways in the playoffs last year. Where Bibby is kind of similar. It's like the 2000s little discount version of that. You see the vision?
What did you text me earlier about Weber's points per game in the fourth quarter against the Lakers?
It was 5.7, I think.
Yeah.
I didn't go shooting splits, which I could have, but I was also on the toilet when I was finding those numbers. So didn't exactly have the capacity of doing a deep dive.
Hey, I was texting you back on the toilet too. So, you know.
There you go.
I like what Bibby brings to the table. I think at this point, it's not star quality. I think we're actually moving to the realm where a lot of these guys are not going to have all-star appearances. And I'm kind of okay with that. I think we're at that fringe of guys contributing in other ways that aren't stars. Yeah, let's put Bibby here.
Are we doing Marley then Bibby?
Yeah, Marley then Bibby. 287 for Marley, 288 for Bibby. Which brings onto the board Ron Harper Senior.
Harper,
since there's now Ron Harper Junior. Or in the league.
I just made a video on Ron Harper. I said that he was a five-time All-Star because I just, no, a senior. I did my player profile, said he was a five-time All-Star, write big text. My brain is basketball mush sometimes. I'm just, I don't know, I type just, it's like the Mad Libs. I go five-time, who fucking knows, anything. You gotta be anything, five-time Finals MVP. Ron Harper. I like Harper. Harper has a year where I'm just baffled he doesn't make a single All-Star team.
It's wild. It's 87 to 94, 19.3 points per game, 4.9 assists, 5.2 boards. Like, that is scoring, that is rebounding, that is playmaking.
Two steals from too. Great guard. Defender.
Yeah. It's, and like, I don't I do know think why. He, there's a couple of years in there where he does kind of get screwed over by injuries. 91 plays just 39 games. 90 plays 35. Also, the Cleveland years, it's a really deep team. The LA years, no one cares about the Clippers.
Yeah.
I
get that. He is the only rookie ever to average 20-plus in points per game and over 2.5 steals, which he does.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. Unless my fact checkers are lying to me.
I mean, it wouldn't entirely shock me because, like, you have
two to and have... 2.5 steals is a big number. Yeah. That's the... I mean, 20 points per game happens all the time, right? But 2.5 steals, that's a different qualifier. That's hard to get to, period. That's hard for anybody.
I like that he's he can play a 2 or a 1. Like, when he's with Mark Price, he's kind of... like, he plays the point guard role, but then defends the 2. When he plays with, like, Jordan and Kobe, he's the 1. He's a 5-time champion, and that just is just wild to go for 5 rings. Now, he's got, like, one of the largest drop-offs. And it's purely by choice. The 94 to 95 years. He goes from averaging 20 points, 6 boards, 4.5 assists with the Clippers. And says, you know what? I want to win. I'm going to play 19 minutes a night or 20 minutes a night in Chicago and average 7, 2, and 2. And it pays off.
It does pay off. I mean, they basically asked him, like, hey, you know, you do all this stuff really well. Do you want to just play defense? Like, just play defense, nothing else. And he's like, yes, I would. I'd love to. I mean, the longevity is there too. And even as late as the 2000 Lakers, he's starting every game for them. He's 36 years old, 28 minutes a night. Yeah, he wins not 5 rings in a row because the 99 mm-hmm. team, he's on that tough Bulls team, but finds a way to impact winning by joining the Lakers again.
With Harper, if we're comfortable locking him in off the board, that brings up Byron Scott, who I think is a interesting candidate. But I'm ready to push for Otis Thorpe. No reactions to Otis Thorpe?
I'm organizing my list. So Harper is 289?
Harper's 289.
Okay. Harper, so you also, we put Bibby in, which then brings up Calvin Murphy. You're really excited for. You don't want to do Calvin Murphy?
It is kind of a battle of rockets for me because they're the next 2-ish on my board. I think what Thorpe does is just so underrated that I really want to recognize it here. The longevity, really good, but it kind of shrouds the fact that he is getting you like 17 and 10 from 87 to 92, 18 points per game, 9.9 rebound, runs out there, and he gets an All-Star appearance where Hakeem is hurt with the Rockets in 92. And Thorpe just steps up, completely assumes the role, and the team is pretty good. And it's kind of, it's a revelation moment and like a turning point moment in the Rockets franchise where like Hakeem has to kind of change. And I don't think they win the title if the team is not successful without him, because I think that success spurred Hakeem to change. And that success doesn't happen without Thorpe. And then when they win the title in 94, just 2 years after his All-Star appearance, they're going through a lot of teams based on three-point shooting, but also having more size and physicality, and a lot of it gets attributed to Hakeem, but Thorpe is right there putting up big minutes and playing well in 94.
Yeah, absolutely. You see him get to 1,300 games played, and next to Hakeem, he was really effective. It was a pretty devastating 4-5 with Thorpe mm-hmm. and Hakeem. I think I have Thorpe over Calvin Murphy. I like Calvin Murphy, but Thorpe was an Iron Man, played 82 games pretty often, got over 10 boards a game 5 times. You see him get as high as 17 points a night. I think it's the right call.
All right. With Thorpe off the board, that brings up Bill Bridges, the undersized, rebounding, dominant forward of the, what time period? 60s and 70s.
60s, yeah. It's interesting. Well, I wasn't really sure what to do with Embry, but it feels like Bridges is a little more, the longevity's better. Embry, it's pretty brief with Embry, but there's like, Bridges is putting together, what, 10 straight seasons? 9 straight seasons of 10 plus rebounds per game? From 65 to 73, he's 13 points and 13 boards.
I think the problem with Embry is Embry has the like makings of a case to be like a quote unquote star. With Bridges, Bridges is never the star. Bridges is like, I'm third guy on this team and let me help you out in those other ways. And so it's like, how much do we value low end star from a really bygone era versus like high end role player, key contributor that could probably play in any era because he's just a workhorse and a rebounder. And for me, I feel like I know what to do with Bill Bridges a lot more than I knew what to do with Wayne Embry.
I think you nailed it. It's like kind of disappointing stardom versus like surefire third option rebounding stuff. On my scale, he has 3 appearances in the top 20 as well. He is 11th in 1967. He's 19th in 68 and 18th in 70. So I think that lines up with what we're how we've ranked them.
Are we ready for Richard Jefferson? Can I get you some J. Rich love in here?
No, what? No, come on.
Richard Jefferson, 5 years from 04 versus 2008. Actually, we'll expand into 2009. 19 points per game, 19.7 points per game, 38 minutes a night. You like the guys that are always out there, that are playing lots of minutes, that are contributing. And I think that Richard Jefferson fits that bill. You've also got his appearances in 3 finals. Did he sneak a 4th one in there? He's on the 2017 Cavs. I don't know if he plays much in that finals. But high contributing in at least the 03 finals. He's not the scorer, but he is the defender. We talk about those Nets teams as being a top defensive team in the league. And then his presence in 2016 with the Cavaliers does really help them win in that championship. I know you look at the points and you don't see it, but his inserting himself into the finals changed the dynamics and gave them a defensive element that they just didn't have when they were too big, when they went with Mozgov.
Yeah, I really would prefer Byron Scott by kind of for the same reasons. You get 3 championships instead of the 1. You get 35 minutes a night in the playoffs from 85 to 92. You get 17 points a game. What do you think? I know you like it.
You know, I don't know why, but I just don't like Byron Scott.
Ridiculous.
He should be a guy that
Lakers guy. He should be. He should be like Byron Scott should have been an all-star. Why aren't you telling me? He played in 38 playoff series and won 29 of them.
I grew up on film of the Byron or of the Magic and Kareem era. That was like my childhood. Is once a week I'd go watch these games. I don't know why. It never clicked with me. I never have liked Byron Scott.
Can you like Byron Scott now? Played in 5 finals. All right, let's go.
I'll take him. All right. So we got Scott in there at 291. And would you accept Jefferson at 292? Or is there someone else that you really like? Are you going to make the case for Fred Brown, our new shooter?
No, I don't think so.
All right. So if we take Richard Jefferson at 292, I just want to take a moment, reset who we have at what spot. We have Calvin Murphy as our point guard. We have downtown Freddie Brown as our shooting guard. We have Andrew Wiggins as our small forward. We have not Otis Thorpe. We have Bill Bridges as our power forward. And we have DeAndre Jordan as our center.
That sounds right.
Where do you want to go?
I think it's DeAndre Jordan time. I think so. Do you want Bridges or Jordan? I'll let you pick.
I want Jordan.
All right, let's do
it. I want Jordan. It's the same type of player in different eras. It's I'm out here for rebounding and hustling. I'm going to be the team's third option. And when I think we get down to that, if you are the same caliber and same type of player in your era, I'm going to lean towards the guy in the later era.
Can we do Bridges next?
Sure. All he's right. My next guy. Where did you go to college? Was it Kansas?
Bridges.
Yes. Bridges went to Kansas.
That's true.
He has the Bill Bridges Rebounding Award named after him at Kansas University.
Nice.
He describes rebounding as an art form.
That's very cool. So from the power forward spot, we have Sidney Wicks, 4-time All-Star, the pioneer of early Blazers basketball, and then Red Robbins. Is Red Robbins the red that has this Nemerita Ginger, or is that Red Kerr?
Oh, I don't know. I can't keep my red straight. I did not one have him in my does. Top 300, so he did not make my notes list on this one.
I feel like it was Kerr, because Robbins is an ABA guy. I don't really remember that.
Yeah. Are you ready for the Wiggins case?
No. No. Andrew Wiggins was good for 6 months. Like, I can't. I think
it was a very important 6 months.
It was an important 6 months. I think we fucked up. I think he's terrible right now, and he was bad in Minnesota. There's just no other player on this list or close to this spot has nearly the amount of negative performances. Where if like I know it's not how we do things, but if each game was worth of value, Wiggins would be so far in debt. He would never be able to buy his way out with it. Even if he get to start again at age 19 and play his entire career, he would be even more debt. Like, it's just the negative games add up so much. Minnesota was bad. It's bad right now. It was bad last season.
I think at some point though, we're gonna hit the point where it's the production. It's the value of being out there and being a guy versus being a team's like sixth, seventh man. And it's like, yeah, they played better. I'm not gonna be as interested. If you're not interested in Wiggins, could I suggest we move him down two spots in the small forward ranking, which would allow us to rank Jack Marin and Bobby Feerick.
Is that right? I have Mashburn ahead of Marin.
Oh, I do have Mashburn ahead of Feerick. Yeah, I guess Bobby's so brief. All right. Okay. All right. At least
let's do that.
At least let me get Jack Marin in here.
I do like Jack. All right. So are we doing Marin, Mashburn, then Wiggins? Or
Well, we can discuss offline because I'm not going to make a case for Mashburn to be top 300.
No, but just I'm just gonna, can I put him there?
Yeah, sure.
All right. I like Jack Marin.
You like him right here?
Do I like him right here, though? I think like it's tough because he fell on my own list because I hate Andrew Wiggins. And so I was like, I'm not doing that. Not putting him in. But now that he's on his own, like, you see his contributions to like this, the 71 finals run for the Bullets. Like, you see him make all-star teams. Like, I kind of feel like Sidney Wicks was better. Like, they played at the same time, sure, and he was just better than him. What are you thinking?
I actually have Wicks ahead of him on my board. Part of that was the Wiggins of it all.
But still.
Yeah. I mean, Wicks ran the floor really well. He was I've got a couple of posts about Wicks from thewaydowntown.com, which awesome blog site. Just talking about older players and their kind of contributions to the game. You might highly recommend them. You know, he's got his 5 seasons in Portland, and the team is pretty bad at the start of it. 18 wins, 21 wins, 27 wins, 38, 37. And then the Blazers kind of win the chip the year after selling his rights. They don't even get a player back. They literally just give him up for cash.
It was the 70s. They did like...
it was the 70s. Yeah, that's how you stay afloat as a franchise.
Yeah. I think with Wicks, like, someone's got to put up those numbers.
Yeah.
And I think he puts up better numbers than the average person, with 23 points, 10 boards, 4 assists, a steal, a block for bad Blazers teams. But they're expansion Blazers teams. Like, we see other guys join expansion teams and have worse, make all-star teams that have worse numbers. I think Bob Wicks Kaufman is the right call. Something is, yeah, Bob Kaufman. What's interesting is in 75... they win, the Blazers win just 38 games, and Walden plays only 35 games, but they were 26 and 21 without him, without Walden. They mm-hmm. play actually much worse when he played. And so I think, like, you have like, maybe they could have won 46 games that season, but they're trying to rehab Walton at the same time. Like, he's like kind of banged up, kind of hurt, and at this point, kind of dragging the team down a little bit.
Yeah, but that's Walton. This is Wicks. I like what Wicks does here. Let's go ahead, put him in at 295, then Jack McMarin at 296, and then do we have room for the pocket rocket Calvin Murphy at 297?
Who is 296?
Jack Marin. Are you up for Jack Marin at 296?
Yeah, sure.
Do we need to talk more about Marin and the Baltimore Bullet, a member of the 71 finals team who gets 41.7 minutes a night and averages 20.6 in that run to the finals?
I think it's good. Like, I feel like it's a little high for Marin. I like Marin. The era is weak. He's not very good, and the era is weak. That 70s stuff. Like, for like, with the talent that was going to the ABA, I kind of want to see him make more All-Star teams, have better numbers, because the numbers like aren't crazy. I had Calvin Murphy ahead of him. Can we just start there?
Okay. Yeah, we can start there. Murphy does play in a similar era, but he does peak later in his career. So you're talking about 78 through 80, where he's really, well, actually gets 74 through 80. So kind of as the merger's beginning to happen, they do steal a lot of the players in 76. That's kind of like the pre-merger year where franchises start to fold and players start to come early so that way they can kind of dictate their spots. He's averaging 20 points and 5 assists for those, was the 7 years? Only a one-time All-Star. Houston's not particularly good, but they're also not particularly bad. Like, they're a middling franchise, and it's him and Rudy Tomjanovich out there.
It's an interesting mix where he's good. He has good numbers. The team makes the finals in 81, but he's hurt during that. But has a really, I think, a really big playoff series to start that. Yeah, 25 a night against the Spurs in the second round, 20 a night in the Lakers in the first round. So, like, and then he gets injured. And maybe like there's a case he had, he stayed healthy, like they could have done more damage to the Celtics. But from 71 to 81, he's averaging 19 points and 5 assists. I think it's good. I think that's good for Murphy.
Yeah.
So our next point guard is Rod Strickland, who I'm also interested in. I think he's kind of my next pick.
I like Rod Strickland.
We forgot to mention our next power forward after Wicks was David Lee.
I'm not interested in David Lee.
Not quite yet. Strickland just has 1,000 games played. It's 13 points. It's 7 assists. It's really great longevity.
I guess he didn't lead the league in steals, but I thought he did. No.
Leads the league in assists. He makes All-NBA in 98, but does not make the All-Star team. To finish the season, the last 31 games, he's averaging 20 points and 10 assists. I think that's kind of why. Like, it's a slower start, but just really great numbers in the second half. It's why he's All-NBA, but not an All-Star.
Yeah, one of my favorite things is the volatility of short playoff series and what they can kind of do for guys' numbers. Because, like, if you played just a top defensive team, and you've got 3 games against a top defensive team, it's a small enough sample size that it's not going to average out, and you're going to have, like, a pitiful-looking playoffs. And if you play a run-and-gun team, it's going to inflate your numbers. He has some wild playoff numbers that I have not dug deep enough into to, like, talk to you that intelligently about. But in 95, he averages 23 points and 12 assists in the playoffs. The previous year, 94, it's 23.5 points, 9.8 assists in the playoffs. In 91, 18.8 assists and 2.3 steals in the playoffs. Like, it's hard to know because these are like 3-4 game sweeps, because it was back when they only played 3 games in the first round. But I do like some of these playoff numbers, where although he goes 2-11 in playoff series in his career, he's got a lot of these at 40 plus minutes, and they're usually pretty high value for those runs.
I think that's right. But our next point guard after Strickland, you have the longevity of Strickland, and then you have the incredibly short peak of Michael Ray Richardson. 3 steal titles, 1 assist title, lots of cocaine.
He's the first to get banned, right?
No, that's the Hawks guy.
That's the Hawks guy.
Hawks small forward. I made a video on him. John Drew.
Either John Drew. Yeah.
Yeah. For Richardson, he averages 20 points a night, 5 boards, 9 assists to upset the defending champion Sixers in the first round. In that final game, 5 has a game high 24 points along with 6 boards, 6 assists, and 6 steals on 11 of 20 shooting. When he was healthy and he was not on cocaine, which is rarely, he was awesome. I do think he's my next guy off of pure talent alone. Maybe I'm overshooting a little bit, but what are you thinking?
I don't think you're overthinking this at all. I had no separation between those 3 point guards. So it's like either we're going to have Jack Marin above them or we're going to have him below all 3 of them. So I'm perfectly comfortable with it. Did you read the per game numbers for that 84 upset, that series?
I did. It was 25-8.
Okay. Yeah. I look at other things sometimes when you're reading numbers, and so I just wanted to make sure that they were fully recognized this year, because they're
great
really
numbers.
Impressive.
They're good numbers.
Yeah.
Is that his only playoff series win, or is there one more?
That's his only playoff series win.
It's a big one. It's a big one.
Yeah. The rest of the playoff resume, not very good. You've got him falling apart in 81, shooting 24.2% from the field. Plays 43 minutes, gets you 11 points a night. Still 9.5 boards and 5.5 rebounds, but, you know, high value rebounding, high value passing. Great defense, can score well. I like it. Let's lock him in at 298. And now we have 2 spots remaining for small forwards, Jack Marin and Andrew Wiggins.
Andrew Wiggins isn't better than David Lee. You can't ever convince him. Sure.
I can't convince you, though, that he contributed more to winning.
I don't even know if that's true. I don't even know if that's the case. I think you're missing his, like, shitty Minnesota days.
I don't care. He was the second best player on a title.
That's not true. That's not true either. He's okay, right. Like Draymond Green was better.
Draymond was not better in that title run. Absolutely.
For
not.
Our next, so just to go over, we have five guys. We have Terrell Brandon, Fred Brown, Jack Marin, David Lee, and Red Robbins. I mean, David Lee has like 20.12 board, 4 assist seasons, 18-11-3 in Golden State, and like they're winning. He's a star you can build around. He's like an actual legitimate good player. Wiggins is awful in Minnesota, and he's terrible right now. And I mean, we're saying like we value peak over longevity. How about 6 months of peak versus like for us? We had Mashburn over Wiggins.
I mean, just because we changed it a few minutes ago to try to so I can convince you with the Jack Marin narrative. Can we at least agree that Jack Marin is the best player left? Like, is there anyone that you're going to fight for over Jack Marin?
I'm not sure. I like Fred Brown. The minutes played gets to me for Brown. Like, a part of me feels like Lee is just as good. But, okay, let's do Marin at 299. Who's our next small forward? Who's our next power forward?
Either Wiggins or Mashburn.
Oh, small forward.
Yeah.
God, Wiggins is just disgusting. Let me look at this.
Just
Andrew Wiggins.
Relax, breathe in, breathe out. I understand. And right now what he is doing is so atrocious that we want to penalize him for it. But that's a bad way to do rankings. We put him up here because of what he contributed in that 2022 finals run. And what that was really important. Golden State absolutely does not win it without his play. And you know, you're looking at 18 points, 8.8 boards, decent shooting, not great shooting in the finals, but really key member. And like, you know, you want to talk about David Lee averaging 20 and whatever or for the Knicks. When he did that for the Knicks and was an all-star, you want to know how many games the Knicks won that year?
Not very many.
29 games. So like, yeah, Wiggins has a lot of empty stats too. You're comparing empty stats to empty stats, and
I think it's a little different. I might be able to be swayed. I'm kind of getting there on the 2022 run, but the thing with Wiggins is he's not putting up stats. Like his stats, it's not good stats, bad team. It's mess stats, bad team. He was like 18 points a game on bad efficiency. He didn't rebound. He didn't get assists. He doesn't get steals. He doesn't play defense.
Sure.
He was like the least impactful player in the NBA. The only reason he's out there is because like the potential of the first overall pick. If he was just a guy, like if he was properly drafted in like the middle of the lottery, then it's like, this guy's terrible. They just stopped playing him. But that they had to unlock Maple Jordan. They had to get it going. And so he's out there all the time. It just never materialized.
All right. I tell you what, I will accept David Lee.
You will?
I will accept David Lee.
Well, how come?
The true shooting. Being added or taken away.
Yeah.
Lee, even when they're really bad, he's still scoring at an efficient rate, whereas Wiggins, he's not
really
doing
high
that.
Percentage.
And then also the 2013 Warriors. Yes, Curry has come to his own. He's starting to play well. But Lee is also an all-star there. And it is kind of the Lee-Curry show with Clay providing a supporting act. And Bogut or Festus is interesting center rotation there. But like it's the two of them. Yeah, Curry continues to get better. The team gets better without him. But you at least see Lee provide a high level on a winning team, which I wasn't really seeing that earlier. I still say Wiggins contributes more to winning, but yeah.
But you know, the thing is, he's a current player. Every year we revisit this, it's possible like that we make that change. Like looking at the 2010 Knicks, though, yeah, it's a 29-win team, but God, this roster is horrible. It's a really bad roster. Like their shooting guard minutes are divvied up between Larry Hughes, Tracy McGrady, and Eddie House, and kind of Wilson Chandler. They are legitimately playing T-Mac in 2010. Like it was a bad roster.
T-Mac was good in 2009. That's not a good.
No, it was not.
When did McGrady fall off?
He could be
2009 his last Rockets year.
No, 2007 is his last All-Star appearance. 2009, he averages 15 points on less than 40% shooting.
Yeah, in just 35 games. All right.
You can't, but you see, he couldn't move anymore. So.
Yeah.
No, you were right in the Rockets tenure, but couldn't move anymore. But all right, I feel bad for bullying you into David Lee.
Yeah. It's okay.
I feel bad, but you got Jefferson. That's true. I did not have Jefferson in the top 300, and I was convinced.
All right. our top 300. One day we should actually read out the full list, but that might kill me.
Would you like me to read what we did
yes,
today?
Yes, please.
All right. 276, Jeff Hornacek. Anton Jamison, Doug Collins, Paul Millsap. 280 is Jason Terry. Luol Deng, Tyson Chandler, Stephon Marbury, Victor Oladipo, Wayne Embry, Reggie Lewis, Dan Marley, Mike Bibby, Ron Harper. 290 is Otis Thorpe, then Byron Scott, Richard Jefferson, DeAndre Jordan, Bill Bridges, Sidney Wicks, Calvin Murphy, Rod Strickland, Michael Ray Richardson, Jack Merritt, and number 300 is David Lee. We did it, Nate. I'm so proud of us.
300 down. And for the people counting at home, since we broke this down by position, listen, it's a little bit fluky. Some guys play multiple positions. We had to lock them in at one point or another. But our top 300 include 67 point guards, 60 shooting guards, 55 small forwards, 62 power forwards, and 58 centers.
So interesting about the centers.
They start off
because the
so
centers
strong.
They dominate the top 100, but like because there's this massive fall off. Do I have lists in front of me? I don't have lists in front of me, but it's the Jermaine O'Neal at 201 to like Domantas Sabonis at 202, where it's like, oh geez, like this is like it goes like 6-time All-Star to Vlade Divac, and it's like, man, what happened?
Yeah, we had 26 centers in our top 100, and then our top 200, let's see, there were 46 in the top 200, so just 20 made it in that round, and then just 12 in the 201 to 300 range, and like there's some guys right on the bubble, well, in between in some of these eras, but I think with centers, is it doesn't rely a lot on athleticism, so you can be a really good center for a long time, and so you do have some of those centers that just dominate for such a long expanse, whereas like when we're talking shooting guards, we're like, yeah, that year and a half of Oladipo was really good. Yeah, those 4 years of Doug Collins.
Yeah.
But you have guys that like peak high and then fall off, where centers, the guys with the high peaks, really dominate the league for a time, and they're kind of other guys are just not as high.
Perfectly said.
Aaron, where can the people find
you? You can find me, Possible Chairs on TikTok, Possible Chairs on X or Twitter. It's one word, Possible Chairs. In this podcast all the time.
You can find me, Nate_HoopsTemple on TikTok. Email us all at hoopstemple@gmail.com. And one day I'll figure out what my Twitter handle is and maybe plug that and tweet. So have a good one.